seen the new Batman movie? How many of us are going to see the new Batman movie? You know how much are going, man? You guys need to get life. How many of you are saying that? Don't you go see the Batman movie? Some of you, I'm going to see it. Can't wait. Hey, let's pray before we do anything else. All right, God, thank you for every life in here and for the lives that are going to join me on stage in just a moment. And I pray that you'd speak through all of us and help us to learn from each other and to see what you're doing in individual lives through the inspiration of books. And so may all that happens today, as all has happened, continue to honor you. In your name we pray. Amen. Well, we're looking at a series that little verses from this book that have had a special effect on us. That's a special effect. Things from this have a special effect on us. And there's one little passage in the book of 2 Timothy, which is written by a guy by the name of Paul, who's writing to a friend of his who he's really trying to build into. And if his name is Paul, he's writing to somebody in the book of Timothy. What do you think the guy's name is? It's Timothy. Exactly. He's writing to Timothy, and it's in the book of 2 Timothy. And here's what he says to his this guy he's trying to build into. Chapter 4. He says, "When you come, bring the cloak that I left with Carpus at Troas." Carpus was related to Troutus. And my scrolls, you didn't get that, did you? Carpus, Troutus, right? And my scrolls, especially the parchments. And, you know, I think it's cool about this verse is there's two things he really wants. He wants his cloak. It makes sense. I need some things. Would you please bring some things to me? If you're cold, you can't really focus on anything when you're cold. So he says, bring my cloak. That's an important thing. And then right alongside the thing that I really need with my cloak are my books. He says, my scrolls and parchments. They didn't have bound books back in those days. They had scrolls and parchments. Now, some people think that the parchments were what the Old Testament scriptures or the Jewish scriptures were copied on. So perhaps the parchments were bring me the Bible. But we don't know for sure. And for seemingly sure, the scrolls are just general books that are out there that he likes to read. And so here we have this guy whose growing relationship with God realizes that closely connected with me growing my relationship with God and me having my needs met is not just me having a cloak, but I need my books. I need to develop my mind. Would you please bring those things? And I'm going to bring up on stage a few people who have had books develop their mind and developing them. And we're going to hear a little bit about their story and how the book has impacted their story. And so please welcome up on stage some folks from our community. You're supposed to give applause so they can have time to come up and get in their thing there. Good. You guys should like sit on different sides so you don't have to have the cross, you know, cross angle thing going. Well, let's go down the line and start with you, Byron. Let's give everybody just your name, how long you're part of our community, and just to lighten things up, the most unproductive thing that you read, like trashy novels or something like that. Let's just come right on down the line. Start with you. Go ahead, Byron.
Okay, Byron White. My wife, Vanessa, and our five children have been at Crossroads about a year and a half. And first church we've settled in since getting back to Cincinnati about 3 years ago from Chicago. I'm a Grisham addict, and I know only one in five books are any good, but I have to read them all. So whichever probably last two or three Grisham novels probably been the worst stuff I've read.
Awesome.
My name is Christine Wilson, and I've been at Crossroads 7.5, almost 8 years, and I still can't come up with anything trashy that I read. I'm not a trashy book reader. I love books, but I like to feed my mind, so poetry is
so
the only thing.
So you're higher and more mightier than the rest of us.
No, I'm just very choosy.
Okay, good. Yeah. All right, that's all right. You're good. I'm Brian. I think you know me. I think the most trashy thing I read is someone gave me a subscription to Men's Health, which I loved it, and then it got more to be Men's Sexual Secrets than it actually became. So,
you want to share a few?
No, I don't. But that's probably the most trashy thing.
But Libby thanks you for.
You can talk to her about that. I'll just leave that silent.
We get together after the service, maybe, and talk about that. I'm Brad Johansson. A lot of you probably know me, but I never assumed sports director at Channel 12 and the voice of the soon-to-be playoff team, Cincinnati Bengals. Right? So we're getting the fire burning already. Trashiest thing recently, Reds highlights. Those are the worst things. I hate reading those right now.
So. All right, good.
I'm Colleen Johansson. We've been at Crossroads for about 2.5 years, three children between the two of us. And being the math major and chemistry minor that I am, I really enjoy reading my Cosmo magazine.
All right. So that was these were all real people except for Christine. She's unusual up here. And no, I'll have fun. You're going to have a lot of fun with Christine. It's going to be good. Let's just start off with you, Byron. You're going to see that the people's story, their backstory leading up to this is very significant to the book they read and very significant to what they did with the information they read. So let's start with you, Byron. What's the book, first book you recommend to us?
The first book, it's A Tale of Three Kings by Gene Edwards. The subtitle is A Study in Brokenness. It's a quick read, about 100 pages. You can read in a little over an hour. And I've read it many times, but the first time was maybe a little over 10 years ago when my wife and I were in a situation where we had to make a decision of leaving a church where we had felt some pain with leadership at the church, which isn't, you know, a lot of us have been in that situation. It's always difficult. And subsequently, we've had to make a decision at another church that we left. And the book, though, is about...
And now you're here. All these churches you're leaving.
Yeah,
you're here.
It's just a matter of... No.
Just a matter of...
the clock is ticking.
Tick-tock.
But it's actually, I think, helped us have a healthier relationship here. The book is about three kings: Saul, David, and Absalom, all three consecutive kings of Israel. And it's written in kind of like a play. But the bottom line is that all three of these kings had conflict with one another, and David was right in the middle. When Saul was king, David was kind of heir to the throne, and Saul saw him as a threat and sort of chased him out of the land. When David was king, Absalom was heir, and was kind of seen as undermining the kingdom. And David's got to make a decision, well, do I chase him out? And Edwards really talks about how David reconciles being in these conflicts and uses it as a way to help people either heal or make decisions being in tough Christian relationships, particularly churches.
And how's this impacting you right now?
Well, right now, I think the main thing is that it's helped me to find a balance between not being a lot of times in churches I found you sort of got to go along with everything to be a real part of the place. And it's helped me to, one, not be naive and not deny my convictions, to be real about what I need, but at the same time to not believe that the way I view the world is the way the church has to be. And to find that balance so that, you know, you're not just going along to get along, but you're also not trying to line everybody up with you. At a place like Crossroads, for me, that's been important because there are some things that are very much in line with the way I think and I get excited about. And there are other things that either challenge me or I might even disagree. But to be able to know where I am and who I am and to be a committed part of a community, you know, as imperfect as it's going to be and as it evolves, I think it's helped us settle into a place, and these lessons are good ones for kind of navigating that.
Someone taught me you're never going to find a perfect church, and as soon as you do, it's not going to be perfect anymore because you're there. You know, and that's part of, you know, that's part of our church. I mean, that's a good word for us to hear, I think.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking, that's part of life. Nothing's perfect. You know, and this just kind of hit me when Brad and I met. You know, I have a Catholic background and he was here at Crossroads and we were really kind of struggling, you know, so I being kind of the analytical, I said, well, let's sit down and what do we believe? And you know what? Everything that we believed was here. It was not what I was used to, but it was here, you know.
Well, let's jump to you.
Okay.
These services are all different. So let's jump to you right now, Colleen. Let's jump to one of the books that you're looking at. And that book is Purpose Driven Life.
Right.
Pop that up there. You and I first met one another in the midst of a premarital counseling or potential premarital counseling, and everyone can learn from your story why people shouldn't ask me to counsel them. So let's talk. Let's talk about that really.
Very quickly, a little painful
for me, but go ahead.
Once Brad and I got engaged, I'd been very involved in my church, was a lector, taught CCD, was very happy there, was very excited about getting married, went to my priest, and my priest refused to marry me, which was devastating. I'd grown up my whole life in this church. I was 28, and, you know, told me I would be living in sin if I married this divorced man, and I didn't get married in the Catholic Church. So Brad said, okay, let's go to Brian's home. He'll do it. He'll marry us. He'll do anything.
Brian will do it.
Yeah.
Brian, he does anything. He doesn't have any morals or boundaries. He'll do it, whatever.
That was what I said.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So we met, and, you know, through an hour of discussion, which felt much longer than that to me, and very intimate, you know, talking about our lives and
a lot of crying.
A lot of crying, which was very difficult for me being raised Catholic because you kind of kept your stuff in-house, at least where I, you know, the way I grew up. And after that conversation, Brian decided to ask his red flag questions, and the first one was, are you living together? And I had just literally that week moved in with Brad because I was a school teacher. It was August. We'd planned we got engaged in August. Our wedding was in December. Brad's dad was dying of cancer, so within a matter of 4 months, we were going to plan this wedding and have his dad there, and unfortunately, that didn't work out. And so for convenience reasons only.
Sure.
I promised you.
For Brad's convenience.
It was convenient.
Totally convenience. I just moved in, and that was the first red flag question, and Brian said, I will not marry you. And Brian got to see the less happy side of me at that point because I was very angry that we went through this process of, you know, an hour or so sharing the most intimate details of my life the first time I met him, and then he asked his red flag question. I totally respected his position. I just didn't respect that he asked it after he found out all about me and our lives.
This is going to come up in a moment here, too, with some of Christine's thing. It's always about, I'm going to get the tattoo, the Grace Truth tattoo. I'm going to do that, and It's a struggle with me. When you apply grace, when you apply truth, and I've made some mistakes. That was one of my mistakes I made. We still, as a church, say, hey, we'd love to walk you through your marriage process. And one of the things we work through is if you're having sex before marriage and being in a, if you're living together, how that's not a good thing going into a marriage. But at that point, I just kind of drew the truth line as a boundary, which I shouldn't have, and said, and if you're doing that, I'm just not going to marry you, period. And I've changed on that. I don't think that's a healthy just across the board, just, that's the way it is. But back at that point, and it created a barrier with us and with you and with God and connected to a community.
Yeah, we both at that point, I kind of, which again, like I said, I apologize, these things are just hitting me. I wish I would have had that because for me it was just, boom, I just left the church. And, you know, I love that place. But because at that point it negatively affected me. I was gone, and I felt like that the church turned its back on me, and therefore God did. And Brad had left Crossroads, and we ended up getting a Baptist minister that was Brad's fraternity brother that married us.
You wore a toga. You wore a toga while you were getting married.
And
we played quarters after the wedding.
And let me just share this point with you. I have to do this. Brad was in charge of one thing, and that was getting the photographer. He hired a sports photographer. I have no pictures of my wedding. Let me just share that with you.
All right, let's stop you right there. We're going to come back to purpose-driven. You're not going to go say anything, because I want to get to Christine, and we'll come back to the...
All right.
That's good. You're quiet for a change.
Thank you very much.
All right, Christine. Do a little... I'm totally out of sorts here. Oh, your book. Your first book you're recommending to us. New Kind of Christian.
Yeah.
New Kind of Christian, and... tell us a little about your story, why this book was important for you.
Okay, I was raised in a church that was very much about religion and rules and judgment and not necessarily about getting to know Christ. And it was not a Catholic church, it was a Protestant church. And so it can be anywhere, right? So But on top of the fact that it was that kind of a church and I was already starting to form a negative image of God, at the age of 12, I was actually sexually abused at that church, and I was actually sexually abused in the sanctuary. So, because it happened there from 12 to 18, as I continued to be forced to go to that church by my parents, I had to re-experience that trauma almost every week. And I know that my brain started to form that the two were connected, God and trauma. And, but I, you know, continued to go there and have to wrestle with that every week. And on top of that, at the age of 15, I was still trying to grapple with God and continue to wrestle through. In a youth group kind of setting, I decided to really give it all to God, and I had this God moment and really, you know, struggled with trying to reconcile it. Of course, I think I was trying to do it on my own and not with God's help. But at the age of 17, I was actually raped and said, "That is freaking it. I quit. Like, God, I don't get it. I don't get you. You're an angry God who continues to allow bad things to happen in my life." So at 18, when I got old enough, I said, "I'm out of here." I was out of my parents' house. I was out of that church. I was out with God. I didn't want anything to do with them. So I spent several years being angry and wrestling with that. And through meeting my husband and starting to experience grace, although he was not a believer, he was just a man of integrity, I went to counseling and went through some healing, although still not sure how I felt about God. 7.5 years ago, I came here right after we had our daughter because I just knew she needed something spiritually. I still didn't think I did, but I wanted her to experience something. So I came here and felt great about putting her in Kids Club, and it just felt really comfortable, which allowed me to kind of relax, get a cup of coffee, come in and sit in the back for a couple of years and start to open the hardness of my heart to experience God. And I became a believer then, and it was still a heart thing. Like, my heart was starting to open, but my brain couldn't really wrestle with it yet. And that's when I came to the book, New Kind of Christian. And that book really helped me to wrap my brain around and to heal inside my brain the concept that it isn't an us against them scenario. Much like the song talks about that we just sang, "Father of Lights, you delight in your children," I started to understand that we are all God's children, no matter where we are in our journey to get to know him. We're all God's children, and I just started to embrace the concept of talking to people on that level, that we all have a desire to know the God that created us.
And this is a launching pad in the book that we're going to get to in just a moment, another book you recommend. So this is all background for you. We're going to come back to you in a moment.
Okay.
I'm kind of jumping around. We're all doing this together, and this is all different every service. Like, what did they say that service? We probably go to every service and find something different because they've all been different. Let's jump now to purpose-driven life. Had that background, had a lot of marital turmoil. Do we need to unpack any more of the... Prior to that, or
yeah, I mean, we were 4 years in the first 4 years of our marriage without a church and without Christ at the center. Both of us believers, both of us, you know, believing that we had that in us, but had kind of backed away from what it was. And probably 2.5 years ago, maybe even a little bit more than that, you know, I had just we were bottoming out as a couple. And it was a struggle. We were on the path to divorce without question. And I was lost. And I remembered the feeling that I had at Crossroads when I had been there. And since I had searched for answers everywhere else, trying to figure it all out, I came back here. And in coming back here, Colleen followed. Someone told her that Brad was attending a cult and she needed to, you know, check into that. And,
that was true.
So we continued through that, but in being in this community developed, a real foundation with, people within this church that began a support group for us that when we hit rock bottom, there were people in this church that lifted us up. And in that healing process we were in through purpose-driven life, and because I'm a guy that takes a really long time to learn lessons, I've been through purpose-driven 4 times now.
We had to scan that book, I think, Purpose-Driven Life. And this book, as we put that up, which is what you guys are recommending, it is the most sold and bought book in the history of America. There's no book in the history of America that has been bought more times other than the Bible. than this book. And a lot of people still have not read it. And, you know, who cares if you read it? It's a matter of if you read something and it has an impact on your life, like how you interact with people in your church or your mindset towards others or purpose-driven. And this gave you guys a purpose which started to heal your marriage, didn't it?
Which was at the beginning of the book. You open it up and it's a struggle for me because it says to start this book, you have to realize it's not about you. And that was my life. Everything was about me. Everything I did needed to be about me. I needed the attention on me. It needed to be about me. I needed to succeed. I needed to see people see me succeed. And anything that went wrong was somebody else's fault because they were doing it to me.
And that served your marriage beautifully, I'm
sure. Yeah, exactly. Really strengthening everything within us. So as we got together, the third time that I went through it, Colleen and I went through it together in a couples group, and as we were doing that and recreating a foundation for our marriage, we wanted to find a purpose and what we were supposed to do together. And we talked about a foundation, didn't feel like we had the money or the time to do that. Talked about maybe getting a golf tournament together, but this was now February, this past February, and said, you know, it's ridiculous, you can't get a golf tournament together in 3 or 4 months. So we passed on it, and Mark Stetcher came up here, who is the president of One City Foundation, during one of the services, who talked about building the City Link Center and bringing a unity together with a lot of the charities, the people of the churches in this area, and saying, let's build one-stop shopping for the poor and the homeless, and let's really change the city. And I turned to Colleen, and I said, that's it. And she said, what's it? And I said, One City Foundation's golf tournament, let's do it. And she said, 3 days ago, we just decided we weren't going to do this. And I talked to you, and you said, yeah, that's okay. And I said, maybe we can raise $15,000 or $20,000. And you said, yeah, that's, you know, it's fine. We just need to get some awareness out. And we said, we're all about that. Let's figure something out. We talked to Stetcher. And Stetcher said, 3 days ago, I was praying for somebody in the media to contact me about how to get something out. And I said, funny enough, 3 days ago, we were saying, okay, we're done with this. And we set up a tournament and got a group together.
You did this together. This was the purpose. This has been the purpose for your marriage the last several months.
Since February.
And so how does that look for you, Colleen, working together on this thing?
It was wonderful. I mean, purpose-driven, it can do so much for you on an individual basis because I was very much a victim in a sense that, I mean, my nickname is Pollyanna because I just try to do things right and all these bad things are happening to me and why is this, why is that? And purpose-driven makes you get up out of your seat and do something about it. And then to do something about it together just totally strengthened our marriage. It's probably the first really big thing other than having, you know, obviously our daughter together that we've been on the same page about. And in the past 4 months, I've gotten to see that purpose was a commitment not only to God, but then it became a commitment between each other. We saw more of each other. We were on the same page. We worked together. And it just, this book just made it clear that when you put God first, other things are going to fall into place.
Well, see, Colleen got online, first of all, the analytical, and said she looked for something to say how to run a golf tournament. And
I found it.
And she found it. But the first thing it says is don't start one unless you've got a year. You can't get a tournament together a year out. So we found somebody who had done them before. She said, I'll meet with you and I'll tell you how stupid you are for doing this and then I'm getting out. So Colleen and I ran it. And for 4 months I was on the phone from the time that I got up in the morning to the time I finished. People at work said, because I was on the phone constantly, even while I was at work, 3 minutes before I was getting ready for a show, there goes, oh, he's on the phone talking about his putt-putt challenge. So we were going through this and we were hoping to raise a little bit of money, and we ended up trying to get a dinner together and an auction together and people involved in what we were doing. And
everyone got tied into purpose.
Everybody got tied into purpose.
Montgomery Inn did.
Well, we called Montgomery Inn, and I said, we need a place for dinner. And he said, what date do you need? And I said, June 2nd. And he said, June's a bad month. He goes, we're tied up. Let me look at the books. And he comes back on the phone, and he said, the only date that we do not have something booked is June 2nd. It's yours. And I said, okay, how much is it going to cost us? He goes, it's yours. And everybody that we ended up calling ended up donating more and more and more. We got 350 people out to dinner on June 2nd with an auction that ended up raising $41,000. We, and then we, we were hoping to put together a tournament that would have a few foursomes together. And we got with our Nike rep, and he goes, how many do you want to have? And I said, I want to have 32 foursomes. And he goes, Brad, if you have 32 foursomes, you'll be the largest first-year outing ever to play in Cincinnati. And he goes, that's lofty goals, but we'll do it if we can help you out. We sold out at 32 foursomes, and on June 3rd, we presented a check to One City Foundation for $107,000.
That's so good. That's so good. Now, your marriage, coming out of this book, and the purpose, built your marriage. That's part of the book, by the way, one of the reasons, you know, why you and I have gotten to know each other and engaged, because I think part of Back to the Crazy campaign, because your family engaged on that, that's why we're trying to get all of our church to engage in that, because you can't really have community unless there's a specific purpose. You say, this is what we're about. And you, I just keep pointing to you and saying things. We never say anything. Do you want to say anything to that?
Finish your thought.
Okay. So you guys felt that with the purpose-driven stuff in the golf tournament. We're feeling this as a church. And you and Damien felt this with this other book. You sure you want me to finish my thought?
Well, but let me jump in just before you guys get to that, as we talked about with commitment. And we had several commitments through Crazy Campaign and other gifting. And Colleen and I had gone through a $10,000 commitment on a gift that we did not think we could keep. And yet I pushed her on it, and she uncomfortably said yes. And I said, God promises that he'll give back tenfold on our commitment. And we realized that. I said that to her as the golf tournament was capping, and we were presenting a $100,000 check to somebody else because we wanted to have some purpose that God just gave back tenfold.
So God gave it tenfold, not back to you, but to what he was doing in the revolution.
Right.
Because it's not about us.
That's good. That's so good. That's good. All right, I'm ready to end right now, but there's another great stuff here. Go ahead. Give us
the part of the purpose I think is that's special about what Brad did, and everybody in here can't wake up tomorrow and do a celebrity golf tournament in 3.5 months, even if you pray and call the right people. And what having poked my head in on this journey as you were doing it, I think what's important about it is that it was an alignment of your purpose and the big purpose that God's given. You're a sports anchor with connections and resources and using all of that. And a book that has helped me think about how to do that in my career, which is connect who I am sort of professionally or outside of ministry with following my convictions of what I think God is calling me to do, is a book about Nehemiah called Hand Me Another Brick. It's by Chuck Swindoll. There's a cooler cover than that. But just to throw that out, it's because this was a guy in a situation not unlike yours who was a big shot. Well, yeah.
Was a big shot.
He was a big, high-ranking administrator for the king, but he had all these convictions about doing something for back in Jerusalem, back in his homeland, where people were hurting. And he used all his resources and connections with the king to pull it off. And it's just a story of what it takes to do that. It's just another way of
coming at it. So all of us can do that. As a journalism guy at Xavier, unique things, you can serve people who are there. If you're a sports guy, if you're a stay-at-home mom, if you're a stay-at-home mom
living in a community.
With living community with 5 kids under the age of 7.
Yeah.
So you read this book, and you actually do something, which I don't know how you can apply anything, because I don't know how you can live having 5 kids under the age of 7, yet you do this thing that is inspired by the book, other book you want to recommend to us.
Which is Blue Like Jazz, which does have a cool cover. And I live in a Blue Like Jazz, let me tell you the part that impacted me is in the story Donald Miller, he writes pretty much his own experiences, and one of his experiences is that he is attending a college that is extremely liberal and has a festival once a year that does huge party that's about drinking drugs and being naked, basically. And
so Brad and Colleen got married.
Yeah, bad. Well, he has 4 friends, and they're all going to this college, but they're all believers. They're all Christ followers, and they're trying to figure out how to reconcile themselves to this community and to feel a part of this community. And what they decide to do is build this rickety shack of a confessional that they call a confessional, but what they would do is as people come to it out of, I guess, just curiosity, they come inside and he says, you don't have to confess to me. I'm going to confess to you the sins that have been done under the name of Christianity down through the years. And it ends up being an extremely impactful thing that he does both for the community and in his own heart as he reconciles himself to his community through humbling himself.
I read that part of that book. Actually, I've read that chapter to people. And as I read it, I kind of weep. Just this thought of having truth and grace and for change erring on the grace side and loving. And then I get this email that just somebody in our community, you, not some official Crossroads project, just like the golf tournament wasn't some official Crossroads project. I get this email that somebody in our community is going to do that thing, and it's about you. Tell us about it.
I live in Northside, which is a community that has a whole lot of artists and a large gay population and is a great community to live in. And I wanted somehow to reconcile myself with that community as a Christ follower and to have a coming out almost, and decided that I wanted to do the confessional that Donald Miller had done in the book in my own community, and I did it at the Gay Pride Festival last weekend. And
we have a photo of that, I think. There we go.
That's, I didn't do a rickety shack. I sewed this really trippy tent.
You were in like a monk deal? Or like
yeah,
this?
We wore monk robes. And you can't really see, but the space in there has two chairs that are sort of facing each other. And it just sort of created a space for people to come in. So people would come by, see the word confessional, and be like, what is this about? My friend on the inside would be like, hey, there's a twist. You should really come check it out. And she had a little baby that was a great decoy. People would be like, oh, it can't be so bad. She's a mother. I don't know. Anyways, so people would come inside and I would sit down and talk with them, and I would start out by saying something much like what Donald Miller said, that I wanted to confess to them the bad things that have been done under the name of Christ, and I wanted to say that I was sorry if they themselves had ever been hurt by anybody that was a part of the Christian community or if they had ever felt judged.
So people have got to think when they see this booth, confession, oh no, right wingers coming to get me to you know, give me grief. How did you even get them in there?
I don't know. Jennifer was amazing on the outside of the tent to convince people to come in. But I think we'd looked like we weren't too freaky. I don't know.
And you had, how many people came through?
We think about 150. It happened so quickly it was hard to even keep tabs because we either had a line or just a continual flow of people stepping up and coming in. So person after person after person, it was very almost overwhelming. And it frequently it was repeat. It was people who would be like, oh my gosh, this is so awesome. I'm going to go get my friend. And they would drag their friend back over to come to it. So people
give
had
us a
an
couple
amazing
of those.
So
what happens in there? I guess the ones that pop in your mind right now. Every time I say this, you give me ones I haven't heard before. So, and you don't have to give me a new one if you don't want.
Yeah.
Give me an example of one that pops in.
One woman that came in, I just resonated with immediately and just, I was like, we're more alike than we are different. And she sat down and said that she'd been raised in also a very strict kind of church that even gave her a class on how to be a submissive wife at the age of 18. And she said, yeah, I was done and I was out of there. And I'm like, oh, I totally understand. I gave her a little bit of my story. And we both started crying and kind of had this moment of grieving the pain that we had both suffered. And she continued and said, I've realized what I really miss about it, though, is all the, you have all the answers, that you can just turn to some page in the Bible, look it up in your concordance, turn, there's going to be an answer for everything. Like, I had the answers, and I miss that feeling of having the answers. I feel like I'm kind of floating out here. And I said, you know what I really experienced is once I got to know God, that I stopped looking at the Bible as a book of answers, that God is such an expansive God that I got to have more questions and desire to know him better and saw him as bigger than I'll ever understand. And I'm more now excited about that mystery than the book of answers. And she just started crying again and said, yeah, she wants to know that God too. And I said, he's in there. She actually asked me to give her an example from the Bible. I got to talk to her about, you know, book stories in the Bible that had impacted me. We had a very intense conversation, but
did anybody say what about those who were gay? Did they say anything to you that made them feel like they really appreciated you going out on a limb?
Almost everybody who came through said, this is a good thing you're doing. This is awesome. Will you be here again next year? I want to talk to you more. the way we were received was amazing. And I thought people would want to grapple with me more about what the Bible says about homosexuality. I was all prepared. I'd done all the reading just so that I could love people. I had no intention of judging people. But I just, if anybody asked, I wanted to be prepared. But people were like, oh, you're loving me? I'm good. We're good. I felt more loved and accepted in that community than sometimes I feel in the Christian community. It was amazing, the experience I had of God there.
I can tell you this one story. Some of you are going to be really freaked out by this, and this is exactly what I'm telling you. You need to, like, realize how unhealthy religious some of us are. I had this really cool, because some of us sitting there going, okay, and you told them they were wrong, right? Some of us are like wondering that, and you're like, you had some people criticize you because you weren't protesting, because that's like the only thing Christians are good for, apparently, is protesting, be a bunch of whiners. I had emails last week from a gay couple this year who wrote a name of one of their friends on the posts in the prayer service, and they had this last week, their gay friend who came in last week. That's awesome. I don't know, every last one, whether you believe it or not, every last one of us have things that we're doing in our life that God says is a better way. Every single one of us. And when you don't see that, there's a blockage in your relationship with God. And this is a place, a safe place for us as a church to all be wrestling with what it means for me to have an intimate relationship with God. And I dig that. That's awesome.
When you just said feeling some ways more comfortable in that tent than, you know, in Christian communities of some kind, it's Donald Miller says the same thing in the book about why he's at this campus in the first place. There's something comfortable about it. And I think if for folks who might be kind of trying to put together, how is that work, as might be a reason to read the book.
Well, and it's a good reason to read the Gospels in the Bible too, and realize that's who Jesus hung out with. He did it too. He was like, I see the rawness in these people, and I'm excited about that. And the Pharisees, who were frequently judgmental people, he didn't really like hanging out with them as much. And I felt that energy of just, you know, excitement of people who were in the raw. It was exciting. It was exciting, exciting, exciting.
Fantastic.
It's good.
Yeah. Hey, before we get on this, way to be faithful. Way to be a person of truth and grace. I'm inspired by you. I feel like I'm sitting under your leadership on this right now. I got that email. I just cried and I saw the email, crying right now, just looking at you. That is so revolutionary and so good, Christine. That is so good. Awesome. Awesome.
I was going to, do we have time? There's
if you feel it needs to be said, we got time, Byron. Get on it. Yep.
I was going to say there was one more book to share that has a similar story. And it's on this idea of celebrating being with folks who are different. And it's called The Kingdom of God is a Party. And it's by Tony Campolo. And it starts with a story about him hanging out with prostitutes and sponsoring a birthday party. And it goes from there. And it just picks up on that theme of celebration with people. And so,
everybody up on this stage, and we can't get all the nitty-gritty details of one like this, everybody up on this stage, including myself, has raw elements to their life and things we're trying to recover from and things that we're trying to grow through. And the issue is not how clean or perfect your life is. The issue is, are we in the hands of God? And are we putting ourselves in learning environments where we're then willing to follow through on what God has spoken to us? And all of you guys are heroes. Whether it's a golf tournament, following through on having a purpose in your marriage, whether it's confession booth, whether it's following through on having the right attitude and the right perspective in the church I'm involved with. It's awesome. Thank you guys so much for being used today.
Can we have one more picture. I don't know whether we should. There's one thing that really bothers me about the golf tournament.
One of the greatest things that happened at the golf tournament. Where's that picture up here? The winning foursome, actually.
The winning foursome bothers me because, No, that's not it.
Well, I'm wearing
the foursomes right here.
Yes, so there it is, the winning foursome.
With Brian Tome in it.
Yes, and I have my Brad Jones.
A sure sign that God was with us that day.
Yeah. And, you know, any of you who want to make it a little easier for us to fill the foursomes for next year, you know where to find me, because we're going to keep our hands dirty on this one and build for One City Foundation for next year, too.
Awesome. Awesome. Let's all stand. Let's all stand. And Christine, would you close us in prayer?
Absolutely. God, I just thank you so much for this opportunity to use the way that you've impacted my life through the community that I'm in to impact this community that I'm in, God, and the way you continue to connect those dots in my life, God, it just rocks. Thank you, God. And I just pray that something that I've said today will, or one of us have said today, will call into action those things that resonate inside of our heads to resonate in our body and that we can go and do, God, whether it's going to read a book or if it's being motivated from here to go and be an inspiration in our community, God. I just praise you for that, for how the revolution starts right here from this launching pad. I thank you for every person here who is a revolutionary. I thank you for that, God. Amen.
Amen. All right, folks, happy Father's Day. If you can make it a one, we'll see you then. Bye.